Hi everyone, welcome back to a new episode of On the Verge. Today's guest is Sarah Richman, who is a therapist in training, completing her PhD in New York City. She is a big advocate for mental health and has built a community through Distressed, where she talks about all things mental health. I hope you enjoy today's episode, and you can watch this with video on YouTube or listen on all platforms. This is On the Verge. Sarah, welcome to On the Verge.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I'm so happy to have you on. And I just mentioned this to you, but I've been looking forward to bringing someone in the field of psychology. First, because it's something that I'm very interested in. And yeah, always read on it and stuff like that. But I've also been in therapy for a while. And I'm the biggest advocate for therapy. Why did you personally decide to study psychology?
I think most people in the field go into psychology because they've struggled with some sort of mental health issues in the past. I mean, that I'm not speaking for everybody, but I think you have to have played tennis to be a tennis coach, right? Mm-hmm. So we've all experienced some sort of anxiety in our lives, maybe depression, whatever it might be. And I think having gone through it myself, there's no better feeling than being there for someone who's going through it too. So that's probably why.
I also liked, right before we started recording, we were talking about how it's something that's present in everyday life, in all aspects of life, because it's like, it's just human behavior.
Yeah, 100%.
So do you think it's that a way through which you understand the world?
I think so. I try to like turn off my psychology brain when I'm like with my friends. Otherwise, you know,
you're always analyzing.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit too into it. But I think what I've learned, especially within this past year, being able to apply that to my own life, my own behavior, my own thoughts, and how I make decisions has been life-changing.
That makes sense. I wanted to ask you a bit about everything that you do, because for background people listening, Sarah is a PhD student. She has patients and she has built the community of Distressed online. First part of the question is, how do you do this? because it sounds insane. And second, focusing on Distressed a little bit, did you start it maybe because you felt there is a need of something like this online? Or like what was the trigger there for you to provide that sort of support online?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, I did start Distressed during COVID in 2020. And it was a mental health space community, but I was also selling like tie-dye sweatshirts. I think tie-dye was like huge during COVID. Yeah, so it was a clothing brand / community. But I think I really made it to create a safe space for myself almost. I really do enjoy being vulnerable. And since I was a little girl, I always complained about how, you know, nobody shares the bad sides of or the hard sides of life, the hard parts of life online. And I'd rather be part of the change than the problem, even though it's hard. Like, of course, I don't want to go online and be like, today sucked, I had a panic attack and like left the party or whatever it is. But I think the constant need to be posting like happy pictures, traveling pictures, whatever it may be, it's hard to remember that we are all human and we all go through really tough times. And so I think it's nice to just put it out there. And I feel like I do get a lot of, especially young girls, reaching out and be like, oh,
thank you.
I needed to see this today. So thank you.
I relate to that so much, because you asked me before, like, why did I start the podcast?
Yeah.
And it is, I think, on that same logic, a space where I've been very vulnerable, and that was so scary for me, but it truly has been like therapy.
Yeah.
Just getting in out. And I had actually thought about this as a question to you. Why is it psychologically so important to be vulnerable?
I think it brings out the human in all of us. We all have so many internal experiences every day, and we're so scared to show them, right? Because we feel like maybe we're the only ones experiencing it. We're the only ones feeling crazy or anxious or scared or angry or whatever it is, all the emotions that we don't really talk about day to day. And I think humans are a species who crave connection. We want to be with people who understand us. And more than anything, I think we want to feel seen and heard and understood. And one way we can do that is to be vulnerable and to like pull the curtain down and really put all our cards out on the table and say, you know, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm going through. And it's hard to do. And it's really rewarding. And it's the time I feel most connected to people, when their curtain's down, my curtain's down, and it's real.
100%. Is this something that needs to be trained in humans, do you think?
I think it's hard. I think it comes naturally to some, and I think not to others. And I think, you know, as kids, we're more likely to share some of what we're feeling if that's the environment we grow up in, right? To talk about the feelings. But in a lot of spaces, emotions and feelings aren't acceptable to show, right? In school, maybe at home, it's, you know, stop crying, right? Like, you're overreacting, you're being a drama queen. So we learned very, very quickly from a young age that emotions aren't okay, that we need to hide them, we need to put them away and save our tears for our pillow. I don't know if anyone watches Dance Moms, but Abby Lee Miller says that. It's a good show. We're taught from such a young age that emotions should be kept behind closed doors. And I think it has become ingrained in society that these aren't appropriate things to show, right? To tell your boss, like, listen, I'm really struggling today. That's not something that's acceptable everywhere. And I hope we rework it, because we're human and we experience it. And there's so much more going on than just what we see on the surface. And I think it takes practice, and it's not it for everybody. It's not everybody's cup of tea to hear other people's emotions or experiences. And if you are a deep feeler, as I am, there are those people who do want to hear it.
Yeah, 100%. I think for deep feelers, a really common problem is feeling very isolated.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
It's like you are living kind of like a life of an extreme that some people might not really comprehend.
Yeah.
What is, like, is there an explanation to deep feelers, or is that just like a natural occurring thing?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think, you know, temperaments, we're born with different temperaments from a very young age. Some of us are really easily soothed and others are not. And then, you know, attachments form and things like that. But I feel like some of us are just a little bit more sensitive than others. And obviously our environment has so much to do with that, whether that's shut down or appreciated. It plays a role into what we continue to show and what we continue to do. I think for deep feelers, it's tough. Yes. It's tough because it's not.
I love people who feel deeply, though, because it's, you're experiencing life in the end. I also think some people who seem that things don't really affect them, it's kind of a show.
Yeah.
More people than not do feel very deeply and are usually people with very rich internal lives. So I find that very appealing personally. And you mentioned something before that I also wanted to get into a bit. You brought up childhood.
Yeah.
How much does childhood impact our mental health as adults?
Yeah. Well, again, I haven't graduated yet. I'm not a doctor yet. But from what I've learned and from what I know, very much so. I think the way we're raised and the environment that we grow up in impacts us for the rest of our lives. And we can, you know, work on that and change that in therapy. And that's why I think it's so important. But when you think about how your parents reacted to you when you showed emotional distress, that kind of sticks with you, right? So if you have a parent who, you know, tells you to stop crying or get over it quickly, your emotions are invalidated, right? So you're more likely in the future to do that to yourself, right? If you're feeling sad or upset or angry, I'm like, well, get over it. Why are you crying? This is stupid. Like, be stronger than this. And that you internalize a lot of the things that you learn from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to rewire that. It's tough.
No, that makes so much sense. It also brings up the topic of invalidation that I saw you posted about. I found that so interesting. Yeah. To someone that might not have heard it before, what is it
exactly? What is invalidation? Yeah. Basically telling someone that their own feelings or experiences aren't true. They're not real. They aren't theirs. So an example that I think often comes up with, you know, most people, friends, patients, everyone is, you know, expressing sadness as a child or anxiety as a child or anger and quickly being dismissed. That's harmful, right? Yeah. Or even when you see someone crying, our immediate reaction is to say, like, don't cry, right? Instead of, let's sit here, let's cry. It's okay to be sad.
Yeah, feel
it's
whatever you need to
it's
feel.
It's okay to be angry, right? We're so scared. I mean, a lot of us are so scared to feel emotions, and by pushing those down and down and down, they often pop up more extreme. It's something, if you're familiar with acceptance and commitment therapy, it's called the beach ball analogy.
No, wait, go deeper on this. That's so interesting. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, I'll tell you, because I love this analogy. I think so many of us have a lot to learn from it. But the idea is, well, first, in life, we all experience pain, right? Mm-hmm. We're all going to experience pain, but we don't all have to suffer. The reason why we suffer is because we resist the pain. So pain plus resistance equals suffering, but pain plus acceptance is just pain. So we have to learn to accept pain. And one way I like to portray that, this is not my analogy, this is a very famous analogy, is through the beach ball analogy. So have you ever been in a pool and had like a big blow up beach ball and like tried to push it down?
You can't.
It's hard, right? It takes a lot of energy to push it down. And if you slip, what happens to the beach ball? It pops back up, right? It pops back up pretty fast. And if you imagine your thoughts and your emotions as that beach ball, right? Like, put away that sadness, put away that grief, put away that shame.
It comes harder.
Yeah, you're using all of your energy. Are you able to like go play Marco Polo with your friends or like grab a drink from the swim up bar? No, you're so busy pushing that beach ball down. And instead, well, that's resistance, right? Instead, if we're able to let the beach ball float and accept that it's there, it doesn't go away, right? We still know that the pain is there, but we're able to continue living our lives. Mm. We're able to go grab a hamburger from the swim up bar or read our book in the pool, right? And just accept that it's still there. It's not going away, but we don't need to use all of this force to resist it.
Wow. And while you were saying all of this, kind of the topic of invalidation came to me as well, because there's, I think there's a link between allowing yourself to feel things and this invalidation that we were talking about.
Yeah.
We spoke about it as a third person kind of invalidating our feelings. Is this something that we can do to ourselves?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think, you know, whether it's from other experiences or learned, which it often is, we tell ourselves to get over it. To get over it. Like, why is it taking you so long to get over this breakup? Or why are you so upset about this bad test grade, right? Instead of just saying, like, this hurt.
Mm-hmm.
This hurt. And I'm going to move the boxes aside in my mind and make room for this hurt. And I'm going to sit with it now. You're more likely to be able to move on and process much faster than if you're like, just get over it. Why is it so hard for you? Like, why are you so dramatic? Why are you such a drama queen? Like, get over it already. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to bully yourself into change and love, right? Yeah. Self-compassion. And I think it's a lot of work, but when you learn to validate your own feelings, you don't need it as much from other people. It's still very important, but if you can sit and know that whatever you're feeling is completely valid and makes complete sense given your history and who you are, it's a lot easier to live life.
The quarter life crisis is a very common topic that I think is easily invalidated.
For sure.
Because everyone speaks about the 20s as like the best era ever. Oh my God, you should be enjoying. You should be doing amazing. And then suddenly you're like, I feel like shit. I feel so stuck. I feel unhappy. I'm a bit anxious.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, I'm invalidating these feelings because everyone told me I should feel some other way. And I think a lot of parents invalidate the feelings
for
of
sure.
their kids in the quarter life crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of the quarter life crisis, what What's the psychological take on this? Is this something common? Do you notice this a lot around you? Yeah. I want to get more into this topic as well, just in general. In the podcast, it's such a central theme, and I told you I started it because of this.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about it because the step to validating as well the quarter life crisis is talking about it.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I don't know the exact science behind it, but I think when we take a step back and really look at the development of our life and the stages that we're in during this quarter life crisis, it makes a lot of sense. It makes so much sense. We've had a very clear path up until this point. You know, we have elementary school, middle school. We have our parents to guide us. We have college. We know what we're supposed to do. And then you kind of arrive at this age and you realize it's not as clear cut. And I think especially for women, we're taught from a young age that you get married and you have kids. And it's a very clear path set for us. And as we gain more autonomy and realize that we have more power, that's frightening. That's terrifying to be like, I can make decisions. And then those, what happens is it's kind of on me. And that's scary. It can be really scary. It can also be very empowering based on how you look at it. But it's terrifying to be this age. It really is. I think if you know what you're doing in your 20s, good for you. That's incredible, but I think that's very rare. I think it's very rare to know what you're doing in your 20s. And when I really think about it, I don't think I'd want that for myself.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to be 25 and already know what the rest of my life looks like.
Yeah.
It's scary, and let's sit in it. Let's be terrified. It's okay to be terrified.
No, I like that. It's the same thing where you said, allow yourself to feel things.
Yeah.
Specifically with getting stuck, I think it's a common feeling to have in your 20s when you're like, I don't know what to do with my life. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
How does one get out of that mental space of feeling stuck and being unable to take any sort of decisions?
I think in my own opinion, again, acceptance comes to mind, right? So when we're feeling stuck, it's like we're pushing ourselves, we'll like figure something out, get out of it, right? Like go outside, like find a new hobby, figure out your new job, apply to a new job. We're so like, this feeling is not okay to feel stuck.
Mm.
And it is okay to feel stuck. It's a part of life. We're not always going to know exactly where we're going and what we have to do. And if we allow ourselves to feel stuck, I feel like we're more likely to find the answers that actually are true to us. And, you know, in my own experience, looking at your values is really helpful, right? Because when we look at what everyone else is doing, it's so easy to get caught up in what we should do. But everybody values something different. You know, some people really value family. Some people really value adventure. Some people value independence, right? And if you can, instead of making decisions based on your emotions that become very intense at times, make decisions based on what you value, it's like a guiding light. Like your values are your northern light. It's where you know that you're making a decision that's true to you rather than what everybody else expects you to do.
That's great advice. I think it's also hard to recognize your own values. That's definitely a journey, but
yeah,
that sounds a very good framework to put when thinking about what decisions to take. Another thing that I thought about a bit is, well, I thought this through the lens of New York, because I live in New York. That's such an intense place and it's very hard to find mental peace.
Yeah.
But I think in general, whether people are in New York or they're listening from somewhere else, there seems to be an enormous focus on productivity and success and things like that. How does one find mental peace with all these pressures that they might be feeling, especially focusing on the 20s?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but in my own mind, there's a million thoughts most of the time, telling me to go in 50,000 different directions, telling me that I'm not making the right choices. I'm a big fan of analogies because it's something we learn in school, but those thoughts that are telling you to go every which way, every which direction. If you imagine your mind is a bus and you're driving the bus and there's all these passengers in the back screaming at you, telling you like, go left, go right, like have kids, like go to this job, do whatever you want. You have to make the choice if one of those passengers in the back is going to hop in the front seat and take control of the bus. Mm. You get to decide if the pressures of being productive or getting something done, you get to decide. It's hard. It's a lot of work to realize that I don't have to listen to these pressures.
Yeah.
I don't. I can continue driving my bus. And if my bus is driving towards my bed and I want to relax for a couple hours, perfect. I'm in charge of driving the bus. That's where I'm driving. Yeah. I'm not driving to kids at 26. I'm not. Or maybe you are. Maybe you do want to have children at 26 or 23 or whatever, or 45, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard.
Is there something that concerns you about society in general and how we choose to live our lives regarding how it impacts our mental health?
Yes.
Like what?
I think we compare ourselves constantly.
Yeah.
I think it's impossible not to. I mean, if you look at it, if you really think about it, we're not supposed to have access to like 50,000 people's opinions in our hand. We're not supposed to know everybody's lives, what they're doing 24/7. We're just not made for that. And when it's all out there for us to just look in a second, how could you not compare yourself?
Yeah,
of course.
It's impossible.
It's natural to do that. And I don't know. There's so much pressure, I think, looking around at you. And I think also things change, generations change. Like my parents got married at my age. I think a lot of parents got married very young, and that's kind of the expectation now. And at least for me, it's hard to kind of realize that I don't know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I want. And is that okay? Yeah, that's okay to not know exactly what you want right now.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
It's super scary. I like that every topic, though, I listen to you speak. And it is so tied to the quarter life crisis.
Yeah.
These topics are all present at this age. And of course, they can be present at any age. But I think everything's magnified at this age. And the comparison between generations is also so big. And it's very hard to feel understood by older people because the world was so different. And what you mentioned of having access to all this information, like how are our brains supposed to process so many things?
Yeah.
Not even just regarding comparison, but like
anything,
knowing everything that's going on
all
everywhere.
The time.
All
it's
the
like
time.
When our parents were kids, you know, if they didn't get invited to a party, they didn't know about it, right? It's like you can't escape. You can't escape it now. Things are very different. And I think our generation and the generations below us, you know, the quarter life crisis
is real.
It's tough.
Yes.
It's tough.
Bringing up phones, this has also really changed our way of dating and like relating to each other. In friendships too, but I think in dating, it's so central.
I agree.
Because there's this all, like, now you have your in-person interactions and you have your text interactions. And they're two completely different realities that are living together at the same time. I also hear a lot of people saying dating is impossible, dating is terrible. Are people having issues connecting romantically? Like, what is going on? Do you think this is a problem that we are facing?
I mean, I again, like I can sit here and say I try not to, you know, compare myself to other people, but that's not the truth. Of course, we all do. And you see all over TikTok and Instagram that dating is horrible for most people. Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, more horror stories than
good
success
ones,
stories. And I mean, a lot of it is online dating now, right? So you're strangers at one point, and then all of a sudden you're dating. And I think there's something so extreme about that, right? So you're like, you don't know them at all, and then you go on a date and it either works out or it doesn't, and there's no space for like really getting to know each other on that personal level without thinking about, you know, what's the future going to look like, are they a good fit for me, rather than just knowing them as a person.
Mm.
And I think that takes away a lot. And again, this wasn't a thing
Back then,
10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it might be. I think it's really hard to get to know people because we look at pictures and we look at prompts, and that's what we base our swipe on, you know. Yeah. how do you know? There's no way to really know. And I think I'm definitely at that stage where I have no idea what I'm doing in terms of dating, and I think I'm more shut down than I want to be, because it's hard.
Why do you think also, well, first, so many people are shutting down?
Yeah.
And second, because obviously online is a big avenue to meet people, but we still have a real life, but somehow people are not meeting in real life.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is happening?
I think because the online dating world has kind of replaced that, right? Like, we don't need to go up to someone in a coffee shop that we find attractive and say hello because we have the app. Right. And I think a lot more things are being considered awkward and cringe. And when you really look at what's being considered awkward and cringe, it's humanity. It's being human is considered awkward and being cringe. It's like, oh, you went up to them and asked for their number? Like, could never, like, not me. Right. When, like, what's so weird about that? What's so awkward about that? Yeah.
And then we're complaining about the online
date. And then we're
dating.
Like, yeah, then I don't want an online date, you know? And yeah. I get it. It's hard and it's confusing, and I so wish that times were different, mm-hmm. and these things were more normalized, just to like meet someone
organically.
Like, oh yeah, you find someone and you think they're attractive or you think they're smart, like, go up to them.
Yeah.
Easier said than done, of course.
I think we need to train ourselves, because the more you do it, the easier it gets. And in terms of the shutting down, this seems like such a universal thing, and so many girls specifically. Yeah. I think just like girls have in their minds the idea that just like it's not gonna happen for them, that just like men are out there are not good, and on TikTok I see this all the time. I don't think that's a very healthy narrative.
Yeah.
And look, I get it. Like, I've also had bad dating experiences, but sometimes we have one experience and then we make like future men
for
like what one man did to us. How do we get out of that spiral of like shutting down?
Well, when you were talking, the first thing that came to my mind is this thinking trap that's called black and white thinking. So everything is either black or white, right? So we may have this one experience with a guy, and now we automatically assume that it's either going to be like the most perfect man in the world or the worst man in the world, and there's no gray.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we often so get stuck because we're not used to thinking flexibly. Mm. We're not used to not going from 0 to 100. We're like, it's good, it's bad. What about all of this?
The in between,
right? There's so much in between.
Yeah.
And yeah, I see it all the time too, that a lot of us are feeling stuck and kind of, I don't want to say losing a little bit of hope, but also it's valid to feel this way too, you mm-hmm. know? It's different. Times are really different, and I think it's a lot harder to get to know someone for who they are without just seeing if they fit all your boxes first, you know? I don't know if that makes sense.
But no, it does make sense. Do you think fear of rejection is highly linked to this?
Yeah, I do think so. I think I saw someone, something or an article or some video of someone, I can't remember, like laying on the middle of the street on a yoga mat, and someone went up to her and asked her what she's doing. And she said, it's rejection therapy. So there's like these cards called rejection therapy, and they ask you to do tons of weird things where you're going to get rejected, right? So like maybe going up to someone at a store and asking to buy their cash register, right? Things where you know the answer is going to be no, and you're going to feel awkward and uncomfortable. And if you can really train yourself to be okay with that, all of this becomes so much easier, right? If you can go up to a store and be like, can I buy your vending machine? going up to a guy and saying, you know, can I have your number, is a little bit easier, right? It's like you train yourself that the worst case scenario is they say no. And if anything, I think it's a little bit of a win for you. It's like we have this like anxiety and fear bully in our mind. And every time you go against what your anxiety and fear tell you, it shrinks a little bit, right? Every time you avoid something that scares you, it gets bigger. And so if you're able to go up to a guy and say, you know, I think you look cool, would you ever want to get lunch?
Yeah.
we're shrinking it a little bit. It's a win whether they say yes or no. Obviously, we want them to say yes. And when we experience that hurt, instead of bullying ourselves saying, like, well, you're so dumb for doing that, like, to be proud of ourselves.
Yeah, that's
like, that
brilliant.
That was tough. That was tough for me, and I'm proud that I did it.
I had never heard, I had heard the words rejection therapy, but the example that you just gave, taking it to a bizarre, almost extreme,
yeah,
is such a good way of going about it, because then you're gonna face a no, you're gonna
face
a rejection.
The cards are incredible. I really recommend them, but I mean, that's the idea of exposure therapy. So if someone has like a social phobia or a specific phobia, the idea is to go to the extremes, to do the most bizarre things. Like, we'll have people go to an ice cream store and taste all the flavors and then leave with nothing. just to like feel that awkwardness and know that it's okay.
It's okay, you survived.
Exactly, you survived and it's okay. You go to the extremes and then the normal day-to-day things become a little bit easier.
I love this. I
we'll go do rejection therapy. Let's go stand and
yes,
like, just ask.
I think I'm gonna try it out.
I think you should. I think it's amazing.
Wow. I will definitely look into this. What do you wish people in their 20s did more of? I know that's such a broad question. Like, it's a really hard question, but is there anything that comes to mind?
I think it's so hard not to be biased and think about my experience in my 20s and what I wish I would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I so badly just want to say care less, care a lot less, whether that be figuring out your future or what people think about you or satisfying those around you, you know, family members. I think to care less and learn your values, because I think a lot of us don't know what's important to us. It's ingrained in us. We're told what's 100%. Important to us from a young age.
No, 100%.
And we don't know.
100%. It sounds like such a general thing to say care less, but I agree. Mm-hmm. And personally, what I think I've been living through, that it's also, not to make this about me, but
please.
Something that I think a lot of people in their 20s experience, and you said it with family members, I think I've been deattaching myself from like what my parents expected
and
of me.
And that is scary. I think that's
so
a huge
hard.
Part about the quarter life crisis. It's like you're at this age and you're like, wait, do my parents not know best? And that's really scary. You're like, I thought they knew everything and had it all figured out. And I'm like, I don't know if that, they're humans too. They're living their first time on this planet as well. 100%. They don't know everything. And that's scary because you're like, oh, I'm a real person on my own. And I have to make these decisions. And I like to say, instead of I have to make these decisions, I get to make these decisions. I get to figure out what's important to me. And that's terrifying. Yeah.
And one thing that really, I think I worked on it through therapy a lot, is not only that realization of like my parents don't know everything, but I had made some of my parents' ideas my own.
Oh.
And separating, like, wait, maybe this is not me. This is not my thing. I'm absorbing something that was not mine.
And isn't that terrifying?
It is.
It's so scary.
And letting go of that. Because also you want to make your parents happy as well.
Of course we do. We all do. You know, those are our caretakers. And it's, you're almost like mourning the life that you thought you wanted, or mourning the fact that, you know, maybe some of your ideas aren't your own. It is like a death.
It is
sad, and like we need that time to sit and grieve the life that we thought we did want.
Wow.
And that again is painful. I think all of this is part of being in your 20s and being like, what the fuck am I doing? I have no idea where I'm going. So many things we're learning at this age. It makes complete sense. And we mourn a lot in our 20s. We mourn our childhood. We mourn what we thought our parents, you know, were in some cases. We mourn the ideas that we maybe had for ourselves that are now changing. It's a stage of grief.
That gives me a new perspective. I hadn't thought of this moment as a period of grief.
Yeah.
But now that you put it in those words, I'm like, yeah. Yeah. That's it.
And look at you. And you're doing it. You're doing it. Even with all this grief and sadness and fear, you're doing it. You're getting
up. You
can
still do it, yeah.
You're getting up. You're going to work. You're feeding yourself. You're getting in the... you're doing it.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on. It's it's incredible the fact that you're doing it, that you're getting up and you're still doing it.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Another thing that I wanted to ask you, I commonly face from some friends the I don't want to do therapy, like I don't think it works, or because I'm the annoying friend. I get it. My friends find me really annoying because I'll be the friend that I'm like, you should go to therapy. Like, therapy is the best thing on earth. Do therapy, you'd be so much better. Yeah. And I think oftentimes some people's reply is like, no, I can fix my issues on my own. And yeah, basically I don't need therapy, or even if I needed it, like, I can do this on my own. Mm-hmm. I usually respond with saying it's a misconception about therapy, because your therapist won't fix your life for you. Like, that's such a weird take on therapy that's mm-hmm. been sort of normalized, of like, she or he, whoever you're seeing, is gonna see your problems and be like, do ABC.
Magic wand.
Yeah, fixed. Like,
we'd all be a lot richer and more famous if we were able to fix everybody's life that quickly. But
so I wanted to hear from your perspective, what is the goal of therapy?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to know is there are many different types of therapy. Mm-hmm. So many that, you know, you'll never know everything about all of them. And well, first I wanted to touch on your friends or the people who are like, I can figure it out all on my own. I think that's also ingrained in us and kind of sad. We've learned that, like, I have to do this on my own. And so the idea of sharing it with someone else is very scary. So it makes sense that a lot of people are like, nope, like, I'm not doing that. That's like way too uncomfortable for me. I do not need it. But I think you can come into therapy with many different goals. For some people, it's for behavior change. For some people, you know, they're stuck in a way that's not helpful for them and they need to figure out how to get out. For others, it's to process, you know, truly painful experiences. For others, it's to figure out what they want. Mm-hmm. It's different for everyone. And I think when you can kind of, and even just going into therapy, you can figure out what you do want from therapy. I think there's no other place that you're going to sit across the room from someone or on Zoom and this person is fully there to hear and understand you, because we do all have our own agendas, whether it's your friend or your mother or, you know, a cousin, whoever it may be. We're all still kind of, we all think about ourselves, and that's a normal thing. That's mm-hmm. not a bad thing. What we're going to say next, what we want to do for the conversation. And in therapy, I think it kind of takes that away a little bit, right? It's like, I'm not really interested in myself right here. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say and what we can learn from that.
Yeah. It's a judgment-free zone.
Yeah. Which I don't, maybe other people are, it's different, but I don't think that exists in many places.
No, absolutely not. I also think of therapy as a tool to get to know yourself. It's a vehicle for you to talk to you, not for someone to tell you what to do with your life.
I think that's a huge misconception. I don't think there's any circumstance where a therapist should be telling you what decision you should make. I think their job is to, of course, we can lead you in a direction we think will be helpful for you is the most important thing. Yeah. But I think I've learned so much about myself in therapy. And a lot of it is saying things out loud and then hearing yourself say them. And you're like, oh, shit, I didn't really know that I felt that way about myself.
Yes.
And hearing it, and you're like, that makes me really sad that I feel that way about myself or about the situation that's happening. And you don't really get that anywhere else.
Something that I noticed as well is you might say something that you haven't fully processed, and the person will tell you, like, you just said this. And you're like, did I?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah,
like,
you
maybe
did.
Maybe you're saying something that happened and you're like laughing about it. And my therapist will be like, it's kind of interesting. Like, the thing that you're talking about is really sad and you're laughing. Like, I wonder what that's about. Why is it that you're laughing? And there's so many things that we don't notice about ourselves that it's helpful for someone to be there with you and be like, wait a second, like, let's go back, let's actually talk about what we just said, what we just unraveled for you. And I think therapy is magical. It sounds so cringy and cheesy, but it's like what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I love my being in therapy. I've been in therapy, different therapists for different things since I was like 7. Mm-hmm. I love it. I do.
I will keep being the annoying friend
forever.
I really think therapy is a really good tool for people to...
For anything.
Yeah, to just handle problems they might have. I also get the comment from many people where they're like, oh my God, like, what's wrong? Why are you in therapy? Mm. And it's like, you don't have to have a massive issue. It's like, if you're alive, you're going to have problems.
I agree.
They don't have to be extreme or... You don't even need to be doing that badly. No. It's like...
You can feel like... Again, this is why there's therapy for different things. For a lot of therapists, the goal isn't to have you in therapy forever. So mm-hmm. if there's something like very specific going on, a specific anxiety or depression, the goal is to get you better and functioning so you don't need it anymore. And for other people, it's that safe space they need for the rest of their lives, right? Mm-hmm. It's not because they're struggling with anything. Maybe they just don't have another place to sit and feel.
Yeah.
And to talk things out. I think whether you're struggling or you're not struggling, I think it's important to give it a go. And if it's not for you, I don't think everybody needs it. But I think to give it a try, most people would be surprised how helpful it is.
Yes, 100%. So go to therapy. That's the lesson. And I know I've spoken to you about like literally every single thing that has come to my mind. But I call this the age of anxiety. Anxiety seems to be a central topic all around. So many people are feeling anxious.
Yeah.
Why is this such a generalized feeling? And second part, are there any tools that people who are anxious might use to feel a bit better?
Yeah. Are you talking about just in terms of like our age, this...
Or in general, yeah. I think people are more anxious than ever. Of course, yeah. I have a biased perspective of people in their 20s because most of the people that surround me are in their 20s.
Yeah.
But I think it's not just people our age.
Yeah. I think, well, specifically about people in their 20s, again, this is a stage of grief, right? It's a stage that's like maybe the most uncertain that you'll ever be. Because there's so much ahead and we have no idea where we're going. We have no idea the right path to take. It's another misconception that we think that there's a right or a wrong way to do life. And of course, like this has been told to us since we were babies. I think, of course, social media has a huge role in the increase in anxiety. And it's tough. I think we're all feeling more anxious. I think we're all feeling maybe a little bit more isolated.
Yes.
Because we only need to, you know, text people or call people. And there's truly nothing that can replace being in a room with a human to really sit and have true human connection. And I think there's a lack of that. You know, a lot of us work from home and a lot of us, you know, don't even need to go to the office. Or when you are in the office, people eat lunch by their desks instead of the community area,
yes.
right? There's so much lack of connection. I think some things for people who are feeling anxious, I mean, again, this is like more, you know, if you go to therapy, you'll learn lots of different ways to handle anxiety. But I think a lot of it comes from thoughts and really unhelpful and scary thoughts that we have. We are so quick to think about the worst case scenario and everything, right? Like, no one's gonna like me, everybody's gonna laugh at me, like I'm gonna fail this test, whatever it is. Our thoughts have so much impact over our behaviors and our emotions, and if we can learn to detach from our thoughts just a little bit and kind of view them as like clouds passing by or leaves on a stream, we say, they become a lot less powerful, right? What you think is not what you are. They're just words.
Mm.
It's just words that are coming into your mind at a specific time. And instead of taking that as truth, like, oh, nobody likes me, and holding that as truth, to take a step back and look at it in terms of a word, a sentence just floating by across my mind, it's easier to let go of things. It's easier to be present.
Not letting be such a defining factor of.
Yeah. Because we take things, I think, also when people tell us something about ourselves or we think something about ourselves, like you're needy or you're dumb or whatever it might be. We take those things and we take them as truth. And in reality, that's not the truth.
Yeah, it's a perspective.
It's a perspective. And of course, it's maybe in some scenarios you become needy, right? That doesn't mean you are needy,
yeah,
right? Maybe in some scenarios something is triggered and your anxious attachment style is reaching out for help, and it makes a lot of sense in that scenario. Does that mean you as a being are needy? No. Or sometimes you feel stupid, right? Maybe you have a presentation and you completely bomb it, and then you internalize the idea, I'm like, well, I'm just stupid. Like, this is just who I am. I'm stupid. And we don't look at it as context, right? We should look at ourselves in a specific context, because we're different. We're different with our family than we are with our friends than we are with at school and our job. And those are going to bring out all different characters and ways that we are, and not tying yourself to a specific characteristic or trait.
And also highlighting that characteristics are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
You can be extremely smart for some things and you'll be dumb for other things.
Exactly.
Like you have strengths and you have weaknesses, yeah, which are not necessarily defining of your overall character. Yeah. It's just a characteristic given the context.
Given the context.
Yeah.
It's helpful to view yourself in terms of context rather than content, rather than what you are. Look at what you do given the context. And when you look at it like that, it's kind of cool because you can realize, well, given where I am right now and who I'm with, it makes a lot of sense that I'm acting like this.
Yes.
You know, given my past and what these people around me are bringing out in me, you know, it makes a lot of sense I'm acting this way. Does that mean that I am this specific thing?
No.
It's our environment is impactful. It's ever changing, and so are we.
Love that. I have one last question.
Okay.
Do you have any book, movie, or TV show recommendation to, like, end on a lighter note? Which I like to recommend content. I think I'm always looking for new things to read or to watch. So I like to get a perspective, like a good recommendation from anyone on the show.
Something to do with mental health, or
it can be whatever you want.
It can be anything. Oh, that's so hard because I love TV and I love books.
You can give us two. You can give us a book and a TV show.
Okay, I think I recently read, or actually, no, I read this a while ago for people who have experienced maybe trauma or complex trauma. The book, The Body Keeps the Score. I really like that book.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful in understanding yourself and others if you've been through some hard things. And on a lighter note, well, I love psychological thrillers. So I love the book, The Push, or of course, Verity. But yeah, I think
I've never gotten into psychological thrillers. I'm going to give them a chance.
Well, I love them. I think they're so good, and I'm like, I want to be scared. It's like fun anxiety. It's right. I'm anxious a lot of the time. So to know why I'm anxious, I'm like, oh, I'm anxious because I'm reading this scary book. It's like kind of fun.
Okay, it's like a relief. And any TV show that you recommend? You said Dance Moms.
Dance Moms. Yeah. It's like that was from, you know, I think it aired in like 2011 or something. But I love like dance and performance. I recently watched School Spirits. It's on Netflix.
I don't know what that is.
Like, I just watch everything. I think there's nothing that I don't watch, but I'm trying to think. Oh, a new movie just came out, Turtles All the Way Down, and it's based on a book about a young girl with OCD. And I think the movie was really well done, and I thought it was pretty good.
What platform is that in?
I think it's Max. But don't.
Max has good.
Yeah, I think it's Max.
Okay, but could it, be
I
another
could
one.
Be wrong. It could be wrong. It could be Peacock. It could be a million different things, but I'm pretty sure it's Max.
Sarah, this was wonderful. I enjoyed it so much. Thanks, I feel like I could talk to you. I have 500 more questions to ask you, but we don't have any more time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.